Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Pigs of Western civilization, eat more grease. Eat more marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy. Lard up the dressing. Fry chicken in boiling oil. Carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt. Little lambs covered with mint, roasted in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce. Buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva. Buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries.
Turn the communist rat off, will you? Turn the communist Ginsburg rat off. He's dead. He's gone. He's in hell where he belongs with all of his readers. Turn the bum off. Let's have some music, please.
All the flowers gone.
Wow, my God, what vermin. What vermin. But the vermin have taken over the country. Let me give you an example. The Obama administration is overtly spying on the American people through an email campaign. Not one word from the vermin in the media. Where are all the anti-war protesters now that the military buildup in Afghanistan is very clearly almost as big as that in Iraq? Why are we in Afghanistan? Where have all the anti-war protesters gone? Again, the vermin in the media have no answer because they are exactly what I've been calling them for years. Now, I realize that that is a loaded word, and we looked up what the word vermin means. The reason I refer to so many of the so-called writers for the newspapers vermin is because it comes from the Latin word vermis, which means worm. Worm, and is defined as a small, common, harmful, or objectionable animal. That's who the people in the midstream media are. And I don't see how you can disagree with me. You know that they are worms. You know that they're difficult to control. For example, one such harmful member of the midstream media did an article on me in which she completely obliterated the facts and continued the smear campaign. She referred to one of the terrorists who had been placed on the UK ban list as a Hamas lawmaker. You see, this good reporter referred to me as a shock jock while calling him a Hamas lawmaker. The fact of the matter is, the Hamas lawmaker on the UK ban list is a murderer. He executed two young Jewish parents who were hiding from him, and then he found their daughter hiding in the attic, a crawl space, and this Hamas lawmaker then smashed in the head of the four-year-old Jewish daughter with a rifle butt. He was imprisoned in Israel for many years for these crimes. He was released, and he is now a Hamas lawmaker, and they call him a Hamas lawmaker, and they call me a shock jock. They continue to repeat lies fabricated by the evil Soros-funded Media Matters. And this is a woman who has written fair articles in the past, who then turns around and stabs Michael Savage in the back. So how do you expect me to respond? I suspect that if you read Shakespeare, you will find out how I am going to respond. Shame on you is what I wrote to her. That is why your newspaper is dead and dying. The New Yorker profile, you give one sentence. I am the only person in the history of this provincial backwater to have ever been profiled in New Yorker, and you dismiss it as nothing important? My friends, there's a reason I call them the vermin of the media. Now, we're going to talk about a number of topics, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We have a fascist dictatorship brewing in America. You say that's crazy? I say you're crazy. They are spying on Americans with emails. That is clear. They are trying to curtail conservatives in the broadcast media because we have succeeded based upon our opinions and our talents. And just as they're trying to shut down the town halls, as Michael Savage is sitting here before this microphone and you're receiving it on your radio, the vermin in the FCC put in by the communist Obama are trying to close down conservatives in the media under the guise of diversity. The new chief of diversity in the FCC, a man named Mark Lloyd, the so-called chief diversity officer, which is a code word for the new KGB, has called on private radio broadcasters to pay a sum equal to their total operating costs in order to fund the vermin in public broadcasting. They want PBS to be funded by private broadcasters. This piece of garbage, Mark Lloyd, who is a failure from the top to the bottom, wants private industry to fund the vermin in public broadcasting. He wrote a report in 2007 called The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio, which concluded that 91% of talk radio programming is conservative and 9% is progressive. Progressive is a code word for communist. The report falsely argued that large corporate broadcasting networks had driven liberals off the radio and that so-called diversity of ownership would increase diversity of broadcasting voices. No, my friend, the reason liberals were driven off the radio is because nobody wanted to listen to their drivel. They can read their garbage in the newspapers. They can listen to their garbage on the networks. The only corner of the media left where there is freedom of speech can be found only on the conservative broadcasts in the United States of America. And this communist vermin, Mark Lloyd, wants this ended. He's going to put you out of business. He's going to put me out of business, he thinks. He wants new programming, so-called diverse programming, that will cover daily news. That means anything fed to the stooge in front of the microphone by him. Public issues programming. That means anything given to the stooge in front of the microphone by the Axelrod machine. Quote, in addition, educational programs for children and adults. And diverse, independent, personal and cultural expression will be encouraged, wrote this neo-Nazi. Now, this is what's going on in the United States of America. We have been taken over by a group of hardcore liberal fascists. They are spying on Americans. They're closing down town hall meetings. They're smearing anybody who stands up to them. They're putting their minions in Nazi uniforms in order to smear them, a Saul Alinsky trick learned from the Bolsheviks. A very few people in the media are standing up to them. One of them is Major Garrett. God bless him. My suspicion is he will soon be barred from the White House press office because he's not sufficiently supine. He will probably have to repudiate his views in order to be readmitted into the distinguished company of the other sycophants in that room. Now, I got to tell you something. If my show ended tomorrow, I will have had a great life in broadcasting. You say, well, all right, things happen. Communists take over countries and they destroy them. Sometimes those communists are found out and thrown out. Sometimes they're not found out and thrown out. Things get progressively worse. Look at Cuba, a prison state loved only by the Hollywood elite. Look at North Korea, where a million people were starved to death in slave labor camps, loved only by Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton. Look at the other communist dictatorships on the planet and tell me, is that where you want to live? Because that's where you're going to live. You're going to live there as sure as I'm standing here because they're taking away every brick of freedom in this country, one brick at a time. And they're being found out, and they're being called out on it, not by everyone, by any means, but by a few brave souls in the midstream media who get near them, by the few brave old people who dare to speak out at town hall meetings, which they're now closing down. Ladies and gentlemen, this country's balance hangs like a loose tooth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Celebrating.
Drop out, keep it going, because the nervous system operates that way. 100,000 million signals a second, right? I'm sorry, 1,000 million signals a second coming in your nervous system. It's that same beat. You got to keep it flowing.
That's the voice of the psychopath, Timothy Leary, who was crossed into hell a long time ago, who ruined the minds of countless hundreds of thousands of people with his preaching about LSD. turn on, tune in, drop out, etc. A Harvard psychologist who was revered by the vermin in the media in his time, who wrecked the minds of so many people, and some of them are dead, some of them are in the Obama administration, and most of the survivors are working for the newspapers. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I ask this question on the Savage Nation. Let's start with the basics. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Where have all the anti-war protesters gone? Now, looking back upon what these vermin did while we were in Iraq, whether you believe we should be in there or not is irrelevant. There was unlimited protesting against the war in Iraq. The vermin in Marin County rode around with bumper stickers that said, no war, no war, no war, no war for oil. The vermin in Marin County, the self-righteous, low-life, pothead lunatics, the low-lifes in the liberal bastions of the world, they couldn't get enough of hating George Bush and the war in Iraq. All right, fair enough. It's America. You're allowed to hate who you want. How come they have nothing to say about the war in Afghanistan? Our airplanes are flying and bombing. Our men are fighting for their lives. What are we fighting for? I personally don't know what we're doing in Afghanistan. I actually don't know what we're doing there. I know what we were doing in Iraq, and I know we were on the wrong side. In fact, in my book a few years ago, 4 years ago, I wrote Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, and I asked the question, and I said, I hope I'm wrong, but at the end of the day, Iran is going to be empowered by what Bush has done. Because by suppressing one of the groups of Muslims against the other, Saddam Hussein, in other words, was a Sunni Muslim. The Iranians are largely Shia. The Shia were under the thumb of Saddam Hussein. And I said by killing off Saddam and his police, and by freeing the Shia who are under his thumb, all you're going to do, Mr. Bush, is create a greater Persia. I was right. That's what's emerging. Iraq is now becoming a proto-fascist state. No freedom of the press. The very same things that Saddam did before are now being done again. So all the men who died there died for nothing. All the men who were crippled there were crippled for nothing. And it's all about greed. The fact is that it was done for contractors and for oil. And to top it all off, we were told that the Iraq war wouldn't cost anything. It would pay for itself. How come no one's asked those ungrateful SOBs, the Iraqis, to pay us with oil? How come not one person said, you owe us $1 trillion, pay us in oil? Because the Seven Sister Oil Companies don't want the oil. They want to keep an arbitrarily inflated price of oil and gasoline. That's why. So the whole war was about oil. And the protesters were screaming about it. Not one protester about the war in Afghanistan. So they have no credibility. The code stinkos are nothing but rotted fruit on the jungle floor. None of them have any validity whatsoever. They were all fronts for the radical left wing. Now that they're in power, they could care less about the war. In fact, and I said it before, I said any airplane, any bomb rather, that has a D on it is a good bomb. Any bomb that has an R on it is a bad bomb. These are evil people. Liberals are the most evil people in the United States of America. Why do I say that? The reason I say it is that they want fascism. They call for fascism. They scream for fascism. They revel in fascism. They would love the government to put people like me in a prison camp. Make no mistake about it. You ask them, they'd sneer behind walls, and they tell you that. Yes, not only take them off the air, put them away in a camp. They're not liberals. They're progressives. Make no mistake about it. The word progressive is a code word for fascism. Now, there are true liberals in America, few and far between. I have met them and I speak with them. By and large, they're decent, peace-loving people. Most of them actually are libertarians or civil libertarians, and they believe in live and let live as I do. But the progressives who are running America today are not liberals. Obama is not a liberal by definition. I've called him a neo-Marxist. Maybe that's too much for you. What would you define him as? A good man who loves the middle class? Why are we in Afghanistan? I'll raise the same question over and over and over again. Why is Obama and the Axelrod machine from Chicago getting away with spying on Americans through an email campaign? San Diego, Tony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, no war for drugs. It appears that the only good war is a war that's for drugs to keep the free flow of opium to these dope heads so that they can keep their...
Let me ask you, there is definitely an issue here of why we're in Afghanistan to do with opium, because the Taliban, the last I checked, did not want the locals to grow opium. Is that still true?
Yes, that's exactly why I called. I saw that same thing. I said, that's exactly why they're there.
Well, I don't know whether that's still true. Let's start from the beginning. Afghanistan is one of the principal suppliers of opium on the planet. The Taliban are fundamentalist Muslims who are against the use of drugs and alcohol. And as such, the Taliban did not let the farmers grow opium. Are you alleging that the U.S. government is in there to make sure that opium flows?
That's exactly what I've been thinking that for months and months. That's the only reason we could be there. I mean, these potheads and dope heads, that's what they're all about. If it's for oil, if it's for...
Well, why are there no protests about it? I mean, bombs are falling, planes are flying. Why are there no protests? They can't all be drug addicts. Think about it. I'd like to know why we are in Afghanistan. There's one theory presented by a caller. I'm not so sure that's the totality of the theory. I don't know why we're in Afghanistan. I'm trying to figure it out. Obama has doubled the amount of troops in Afghanistan. Not one word from the vermin in the media. The little men and the little women haven't noticed it. Instead, they're glorifying, let's let it go. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. Let us go to the callers. Rich in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, you're the reason Obama's ratings are going down. By you're criticizing him, you are the sole reason why those ratings and the...
Oh, no, that, I wish I could take credit for it, but believe me, you've got many others who are standing up to these Nazis from Chicago.
You
listen to this show, but believe me, anyone who knows what's going on is standing up to this Nazi war machine from Chicago. Thanks for the call. Los Angeles, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, good to talk to you. So as far as, you know, this tactic that they're using, they're dressing themselves as liberals, but you're right, they are Nazis, and that is actually just a tactic. The people who believe them are dupes and shills, and that's all there is to that. I have a theory about Afghanistan, too, which is, number one, if you go back and you look at the history of the opium trade, the British government has controlled that for centuries. And we're still in there with NATO, which is Britain, France, and...
Are you saying that we're basically like Hessian troops hired in order to make sure that the flow of heroin, opium, continues to flow from Afghanistan? Is that really what you're saying?
Well, like you said, it's the source of opium for one of the greatest sources for opium on the planet. There's a lot of...
Savage.
Driving that train... Cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead.
Here is the theme song, the national anthem of the progressive movement.
And
Casey Jones.
Just crossed my mind.
Go to MichaelSavage.com. I want to read you some of these headlines I found today. Look, ACLU says pray and go to jail. Now, you know the ACLU, a group of anti-Christian vermin. You know that they're evil. You know that the word civil and liberty has nothing to do with the ACLU. Nothing. It's another front group for anti-Christian lawyers. They are suing a school district and several devout Christian employees who are praying on their own. Yet they have clubs which preach diversity. They have clubs which teach various and sundry things, but they don't teach religion. Now, how can you permit a club that teaches bestiality but not a club that permits prayer? So the vermin in the ACLU, who all should be arrested, in my opinion, this is not freedom of speech. Once you go to the courts to stop religious people from praying and threaten to sue them and threaten to put them in jail for praying on school grounds, you're no longer you're not using freedom of expression. You're using the courts to suppress freedom of expression. If we had a conservative administration that mattered while Bush was in power, the ACLU would have been in jail. So many things should have been done while Bush had the power that he didn't do. Instead, he expended all of that political capital on a losing war in Iraq for his cronies in the contracting trade. Because don't tell me that you cared about 24 million Shia who were oppressed under Saddam Hussein. You never met an Iraqi, did you? You know one Iraqi in your life? You cared about the freedom of the people in Iraq? You really cared about that? You must be joking. So you could say, all right, well, we shouldn't have been in Iraq. So by the same token, why are we in Afghanistan? I thought when Obama came to power, there'd be no more war. So where are all the bumper stickers, no war? For years it was no war for oil. Then it was no war at all. Now that Obama's in power, do you see any no war bumper stickers? These self-righteous, fraudulent progressives no longer have a no war bumper sticker, do they? Because to them there is no war. Why is there no war? Because the worms in the media don't even show you the war footage. They don't want you to see it. Because, as I said to you, bombs that have a D on them are good bombs. When Bill Clinton mercilessly bombed the innocent Serbian people, killing 2,500 innocent men, women, and children, and when Bill Clinton blew up every bridge on the Danube River with NATO, with a U.S. Air Force planes remarked as NATO planes, you did not see one picture of the bridges blown up over the Danube River, because the vermin in the media covered for Bill Clinton. I have never forgotten the war crimes against the Serbian people. I have never forgotten what Madeleine Albright, Jamie Rubin, Wesley Clark, and Bill Clinton did to those people. I'm not alone in this. Millions of Europeans know that that administration committed war crimes against the Serbians. Millions of them in Europe knew this. Well, why is there no discussion now about the war in Afghanistan? Why is there not even a mention of the war in Afghanistan? Why is there no discussion of the costs of the war in Afghanistan? After all, wars have bankrupted nations in the past. One could argue that the Iraq war bankrupted America. I know that the men on Wall Street were probably more responsible for the bankrupting of America. I would say Barney Frank single-handedly destroyed the American financial industry by undermining it, by forcing the banks to give loans to unqualified applicants. Unqualified applicants were given mortgages. You know, it's interesting, the word mortgage means death gauge. I remember when I was young and I signed my first mortgage. How old was I? I don't know, 29, 30. I don't remember. I don't remember the age. But I remember saying, I'm signing a 30-year mortgage, death gauge. And the reason that it was called a death gauge is because it was skewed out so that just about when you made your last payment, you dropped dead and your wife got the house, which is what happened, you know, in my father's generation. The men all died about when the last check went out. Then the women live another 30 years for free in the house. That's the way it was. So mortgage, death gauge, meant basically that you'd pay for your house for the rest of your life, but at the end of the life, the house would be free and clear. But you had to put down 20% to get a mortgage, a death gauge. You had to kill yourself to get that 20%. I worked all my life to get that 20%. Killed myself to get that 20%. I went to banks before it. I had 18%. No, can't give it to you. Then I wake up and I see that there are millions of people, illegal aliens, unqualified crack dealers buying fraudulent houses in crack dens all over America in order to make sure that the SNL vermin, the vermin in the SNL business, you want me to name a few? I want me to name a few SNL crooks. Would you like me to disclose their names and what they've done with their billions that they stole? Would you like a few names? Your hair will stand up. I'll name the banks, I'll name the groups that were involved in this Ponzi scheme, and I'll tell you who was the biggest donor to the ACLU, who was the biggest donor to these radical progressive groups. They are liberals who ran these banks. They bailed out a few years before it all crashed for billions of dollars. They have a name. They live in a certain place. They gave $9 million to the ACLU, millions of dollars to these progressive groups that are now putting us into the Nazi fascist era. And they all consider themselves good liberals, and they put stars on their back. So this very collapse of capitalism is now being used to usher in a form of communist fascism in this country by funding the Soros-like groups like the ACLU and the others who want to put free speech out of business, and et cetera. It's a very, very dangerous time that we're in right now. So I bring it back to the first question today. I'm not in a very particularly good mood. Why are we in Afghanistan? I'm not in a lazy, happy mood like I was yesterday. I'm actually in a very angry, serious mood. My moods change. I'm a moody person. Forgive me. Forgive me for not being a flatline. Forgive me for not being a fraud like David Letterman. Forgive me for not being a fat slob with a golf club who thinks that his job is to be a happy talker every day for the Republican cause. Forgive me for not being Wallbanger. Porn vanity. Forgive me for not being a pawn of the vein. San Fran Frico. Joey, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir, Dr. Savage. I believe the reason that we're in Afghanistan is military strategy. In order to hold back two of America's threats to our freedom, Iran being one and Russia being the other. If we surround Iran and be at the southern border of Russia, we could hold the enemy at bay.
Let me think about that. So Iran is our enemy now? I thought Iran was Obama's friend. Iran was in the axis of evil when evil Bush was in power. But now that the good progressive president has said Iran is his friend.
Yes, sir.
So why are we afraid of Iran? Aren't they a good friend of Obama? He did nothing when they imprisoned the democracy protesters, did he? What did Hillary Clinton do when they were being tortured and murdered and raped, which is apparently going on in Iran's secret jails right now? How come there's no discussion of it by the worms in the media?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that. I don't believe that's true. I don't believe our military is in Afghanistan as a wedge against Iran. I mean, Iran could be wiped off the map pretty quickly, couldn't it? We don't need ground troops to take care of the nuclear threat from Iran. We have nuclear submarines. What the hell do they do? What are they useful for? What are we floating these behemoths around for? Training for?
Sir.
You could fire conventional munitions at Iran's nuclear facilities from submarines or from high-flying bombers. They wouldn't even know the planes were over their airspace, and they could knock out their entire nuclear industry without them even knowing where it came from. What do you mean ground troops? What kind of nonsense is this? We're not in the Napoleonic era. We've got intercontinental ballistic missiles that do not have to be nuclear armed. They could be conventionally armed. They could wipe out the nuclear industry in Iran. But we're not doing it, so I don't go for that. I don't think we're there for anything to do with Afghanistan or Russia at all. I don't believe it at all. I'd like to know why we are in Afghanistan. I'd like an answer to this question. I have no idea why we're there. Now, we know why the media is not reporting it, because they're liars and they're thieves and they're evil. Every last one of them is a frigging worm. I'm so angry at them. They walk around like they're so important, and everybody looks up to them. Their lousy, stinking newspapers are going broke because of their crappy journalism, because they won't do any research, because they cover for this evil administration. That's why they're going out of business. How could a little show like mine thrive without publicity if I was so bad? How is that possible? I have no publicity machine. I'm not part of a corporate structure. How does one man alone make a dent in this incredible geography of the media? How is it possible? Because the truth is the most powerful thing on earth. People still have something in them that responds to a truthful man. And you know that whether or not I hit the mark every time I am seeking the truth, you know that. And you know that there's very little left in this media you can count on. You know the politicians are not as trustworthy as your neighborhood prostitute. You know that. You know that most of the mainstream media work for the Obama administration. You know that as well. So what's left for you? Internet, blogging, talk radio, the kings of freedom of speech. And now this administration is now going after talk radio, as we told you they would. They don't need the fairness doctrine. That's a head-on assault. Criminals like this don't do head-on assaults. Everything you do is undermined. They take your emails and then they use them against you to spy on you. And then they say they didn't do it. Then they have a low-life undertaker that Gibbs. Gibbs should be thrown out. He should be tarred and feathered in that office. Verbally, of course. What a pile of paltry garbage when Major Garrett stood up to him over those emails. All right, but let's stick to what you can know about, which is the Afghanistan thing. Why are we there? Why are we there? Where is the anti-war movement? I don't know where it went. I'd like to know. Why are we in Afghanistan? San Francisco, KNEW. Bob, why are we in Afghanistan? Please tell us.
I think the defense industry benefits from it, and also I think the defense industry is also committing a Ponzi scheme in the process. That's my point.
No, what do you mean? Try to spell that out. What do you mean by making more bombs and bullets?
No, by profiting from it. Like, they just get the money out of it from the politicians and from the U.S.
Well, all right, beware the government media complex. That's a pretty given guess. We understand that. But we just got through with a war that bankrupted America and Iraq. The people threw Bush out because of the war. amongst other things. The war was the big one. So now we have an anti-war president who's still at war. In fact, he just doubled the troops to Afghanistan. So why are we in Afghanistan? Doesn't make sense. Something doesn't add up here. Something's wrong with the picture. John in New York, WOR, why are we in Afghanistan?
Mike, there's only one thing in Afghanistan. That call you had down the road.
I can't hear a word you're saying. I've asked my team to raise the volume. I'm going to have to go off the air because something's wrong technically. I can't hear you. Go ahead, please.
Yes, that caller down the road that you had mentioned it, and he hit it right on the money. We are there for drugs. Nothing else, nothing more. That whole region up there is no oil there. It is mountain, desert, and region. Senior George Bush understood that. The Clinton understood that. George Bush understood that. And now Barack understands that. Drugs, drugs, drugs. So over 5,000 soldiers dead for what? Drugs. So he shifts the troops out of Iraq, shifts them over there to protect the control of heroin and cocaine coming out of that region. So that last
I can't believe that's the sole reason. They would never get away with it if it was that naked. Wouldn't the distinguished progressive journalists have caught that by now? Wouldn't all of the distinguished NPR journalists have caught that by now? After all, they're so intelligent. They're not shock jocks. They're serious journalists at NPR. How come they haven't caught on with that?
Well, because they don't want to talk about it. See, you got farmers there. They don't want them to grow anything else there. Well, they've been trying to get them for years to stop growing the cocaine in the poppy fields and start growing tomatoes and vegetables. But the farmers understand, no, the biggest money maker they can have coming out of that region is the cocaine and the heroin.
So, let me back up. The Taliban are fundamentalist Muslims who did not want the opium grown. Is that correct?
Yes.
In addition to being throwbacks in terms of how they treated women and others, they also were very, very fundamentalist with regard to no drugs, no alcohol, correct?
That's correct.
So you're saying that our troops are being used to kill the Taliban who are against drugs?
That as well as, once again, to control. Understand something. I'm saying control.
But how come the so-called liberal media hasn't caught on with this? How come all of the snide vermin in Hollywood don't see this? How come the smart vermin at the New York Times don't see this? All the worms of the media. You're telling me they wouldn't be onto this if it was true?
If any of those reporters ever went over there to investigate what's really coming out of there and who's controlling the drugs, their executives will never let that get out in the media, because then Washington will slap them with the biggest fine they can think of or control them and tell them.
Well, let me ask you another thing. What are the soldiers who were going over there being told they're being sent there for? Why are they fighting and dying? They must have to tell the troops something about why they're over there, right?
Well, they are brainwashed. They are controlled. They're like guinea pigs led to slaughter. That's all that's about. It's controlling.
No. But when young guys are sent, deployed to Afghanistan, don't their leaders tell them why they're going to fight, what they're fighting for?
No, they tell them one thing. Their marching orders are kill, kill, kill. They don't even know who they're killing. They don't know why they're killing. That's why these young boys come back. They are whacked up out of their heads. They see the killing in front of them. They see the bloodshed. And when they finally wake up, they sit back and they look at themselves and they say, why am I here? Why are we here? To do what? Protect the poppy fields? Are you out of your mind?
John, are you ex-military that you're so vehemently involved in this thought process?
No, I read, and I read, and I read between the lines, and I listen to statements.
Oh, John, hold on, wait a minute. So what publications have put in your head the idea that we're in Afghanistan to protect the drugs? Who's saying that? Are any so-called liberals reporting that?
If you pick up certain international newspapers, or if you go on the Internet, you can read between the lines and see what's really going on.
You mean, but the geniuses, the distinguished journalists of the liberal press haven't written any of this?
They're not
shock jocks. How is that possible? They're not shock jocks. They're genius journalists. How come they haven't written about Obama's war for opium? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times they are a-changing.
Well, no one knows who he is anymore. Sad, he was an icon years ago. But rock star, rock legend Bob Dylan, who I actually think is a great performer, was stopped in New Jersey today while walking around Long Branch, New Jersey. And he was stopped by police, and they said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "Bob Dylan." They said, "Let's see some ID." Both officers didn't know who he was. The incident began at 5 p.m. when a resident said a man was wandering around a low-income, predominantly minority neighborhood several blocks from the oceanfront looking at houses. All right, you know what he was doing there. That's wandering around a low-income, predominantly minority neighborhood. He wasn't looking at the architecture and the story. But the point is that they didn't know who he was. It's unbelievable to me that a guy who was once an icon is unknown. D.B. Pennebaker, you know, Cinema Verite, trailing him around with a camera like he was God. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think the man is still a fabulous performer. But no one knows who he is. No one knows who he is anymore. The world changes so rapidly. Why are we in Afghanistan? Where have all the anti-war protesters gone? Huh? They're not singing about it anymore. There is no war. Well, the men are dying, but they're actually dying of, they're being run over by trucks in Afghanistan. And as I said to you, there's no such thing as a war that's bad if a Democrat orders it. So when JFK got us into Vietnam, it was a good war. When Nixon got us out of Vietnam, it was a bad war. You see how it is? Any war that is started by a Democrat is a just war and a good war. Any war that is initiated by a Republican is a bad war. So right now, history is repeating itself. Obama's doubled the troop size in Afghanistan. No one knows why we're there. I've asked the question. I don't really know. I've heard opium. I've heard this. I've heard that. I don't know the answer. I still don't know. Strategically, it makes no sense. With all the submarines we have and B-7, B-bombers, what do we need? What do we need men in Afghanistan for? For what? To buy prayer mats? What are they doing there?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mixing up the medicine, I'm on the pavement, thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, batch out laid off, says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway, looking for a new friend. The man in the
kids. So, the conservatives are now the liberals. The liberals are now the conservatives. The world is turned upside down. Bob Dylan's song was really written for you, the town hallers. Listen to it.
Face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway.
They are now the people in the trench coats. They are now the people spying on the people who oppose the government. The federal government is now filled with ex-potheaded LSD types who are now become their worst enemy. So everything that the 60s stood for in many ways, the good things of it, let's put it to you that way, the libertarian side of it, the civil liberty side of it, is now being crushed by the Obamaites now that they have total power. And I knew it in the 60s who they were. I always knew the left were the fascists. I knew it every time I ran into them who they were. I knew them. I knew many of them in those days. And I dropped them like fleas on my body. I had to use like hair lice to get them out of my body. My whole life I had to get the lice out of my being. The lice of San Francisco that I unfortunately associated with. I was taught as a child if you lie down with lice, you're going to wake up lousy. It took me years to get the lice of San Francisco out of my hair. I'm a loner, I admit it. I don't have any friends. I'm alone. I have a dog and a family. What more does a man need? So I've been thinking about it. You know, we had a call yesterday from someone, a martial artist. We were talking about extreme exercise and how it's harmful. And a guy called and said he's a martial arts teacher, and he agrees with me that he teaches, you know, a different flow. And this is about gathering the energy fields and using it in the martial arts. And I said, I know what chi energy is because I use it on the radio. And he said, yes, you do. And I was thinking about that on the way into the studio today about where the heck does my chi energy come from? I mean, where does it come from? I don't even know. I honestly don't know. I was walking in the streets of San Francisco today, and I was thinking about it. I mean, it'd be nice to put a halo on my head and say, I get it from God. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? Sometimes I pray to God. I don't definitively go to a house of worship to pray to God. I ask God every day, 6 to 7, 8 times a day, to forgive me. That's all. Now, does that give me energy? I don't know. Maybe God knows that I truly mean it. There are people who go into temples and churches, and they try their best, but there's no sincerity in their heart. And I think God doesn't like insincere prayer. I think he likes sincere prayer, people who are genuinely understanding of how flawed they are. So who knows? But then I don't think any of that really matters either. I don't know where my chi energy comes from. Maybe it's inborn. There's a study of twins. They did one study after another of twins. I'm not a twin. And they, some twins are separated at birth, and then they meet each other 30 years later. They find out every life phase of one twin is the same life phase of the other. They got married at the same age without knowing each other. They got divorced at the same age. Their hair turned. Everything was the same. It gets same profession because it was encoded in their genetics. So I started to think, you know, although I've been a self-willed person all my life, on a philosophical level, I'm starting to say, I don't know, maybe it's all genetically encoded. But I don't believe it because I was almost dead in this earth many times. And I prayed for God to save me and give me a living. I told you that's how I got into radio. And I never stopped running since because it came. See, I said to God, give me a living. Because no matter what I did, I earned a PhD, I wrote 8 books, and I was still thrown onto the ash heap of history by liberalism. They would not hire a white male. Everywhere I turned, they said white males need not apply. We need only unqualified women and minorities in the positions, which is why the universities have become the low-life places that they are, basically houses of ill repute and of propaganda, except in a very few departments. The universities today are worthless. You're better off becoming an electrician than you are becoming a professor. You'd be a more honest man if you were a purveyor of prostitutes than you would be as a professor of political science. That's my own personal bias. But why did I rise back up from the ashes? How did that happen? Well, I prayed, so here I am. But I also made a commitment, and the commitment was get rid of the lice that you know. Don't talk to them. Don't let them near you. They undermine you. They're jealous of you, and they are. None of them amounted to anything. I don't even mention their names. I knew many people in San Francisco who thought that they were writers and poets. No one ever heard of them. They were nothing. They were frauds. They were poseurs. You should have heard them walking around with the image that they had of themselves, who they were. The world was going to know them years later. Nothing. Busted suitcases. Zeros. Does it make them bad? Yes. It made them bad because unlike average people who don't assume that they're something great, these schmucks thought they were great. Makes them bad because they still deceive themselves into thinking they're good. Most progressives think that they're good. Don't you understand that? And the do-gooders will kill all of us because the road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions. Look out for the do-gooder because he's the one who's going to slam the door on your face when you're put into a jail cell. He'll be the one doing it, not a right-winger. There are no right-wingers. The right was killed by George Bush. 8 years of George Bush destroyed the entire conservative movement and the entire right wing in this country. It's gone. It's dead. There is no enemy. And that leads me to today's show. I told you yesterday that when an animal is cornered, he's a dangerous animal. Right now, think of the Obama administration as a cornered wild animal. It has overplayed its hand. The American people are onto it, and it's in a corner, and it's very vicious right now, and it's dangerous. It has not yet acted, fought back. It will. And something terrible is going to happen. Every dictatorship needs an enemy. For Hitler, it was the communists. For the communists, it was Hitler. Every nation that has seen a dictatorship arise has seen an enemy. The Castros continued to talk about the evils of American capitalism. They've needed the external enemy to justify their power grab and to justify their fascism. So who, therefore, is Axelrod's enemy? who is Obama's enemy? Where are they? Who is he named to be their enemy? Well, they made a big error by saying that the old people in wheelchairs who came out to the town hall meetings, people with muscular dystrophy in wheelchairs, were the enemy. It blew up in their face. They stepped on a landmine. They hung themselves by their own petard. It was a pleasure to watch, by the way. Blew up in their face. They did it. They actually showed their true colors. They showed their true face. But they can't go on with that one. They said people in wheelchairs, old white people, are the enemy. That blew up on them. So who's the enemy? Who is the enemy of the Obama administration? Who is he going to choose? Who is going to be the enemy, internal or external? Well, stay tuned to find out because we don't know yet. I can guarantee you, as we're speaking, for the last week, they have been having focus groups and meetings around the clock to figure out who to blame for what went wrong in this country. And I can guarantee you, very soon you're going to find out who the enemy will be, because they're about to bring it out as a newly created product, the new enemy of progressivism, the new enemy of health care for oil, for all, will soon be named. That's why I ask you a question that has nothing to do with this, is why are we in Afghanistan? Where have all the protesters gone? You know, can't you people in the middle put two and two together? All the left-wing progressives who claimed they were anti-war were not anti-war. They were anti-Republican. They were anti-conservative. They have disappeared. They've gone away. They were funded by the left. They were funded by George Soros. They were funded by these so-called progressive groups. They've disappeared now. They're all working for Obama. Either they've been absorbed into ACORN or they've been absorbed into another proto-fascist group, but they're no longer out there. So they're not protesting. You could say they've been co-opted, whichever way you put it. There is no anti-war movement because there never was one. It was an anti-Republican movement. So I now make another prediction. I'm going to make a prediction on the show. After all of this domestic policy dispute is over, and it may be over sooner rather than later, there's going to be a growing anti-war movement in this country, and it's going to come from the conservative base. That's right, you heard me. The liberals of today are the conservatives of yesterday and vice versa. There will be an anti-war movement in this country, and it will come from the conservative base. It will come from ex-military in particular who understand that they're not Hessians, understand that the U.S. military should not be used as a Hessian force, a force for hire, and they're going to protest this war. It's going to come from within. That's my prediction. I'll make a few other predictions. The enemy that Obama is going to create as standing in the way of true progress and health care for all will be a domestic enemy. There will be no external enemy. It's not Iran. It's not Syria. It's not North Korea. No, those aren't the enemies of America. The enemies of America are the talk radio hosts. The enemies of America are the bloggers who do not buy the crap put out by the group from Chicago. Those are going to become the new enemies of the Obama administration. Just as in every dictatorship, they're going to name you, and they're going to try and shame you, just as they did to me in England. I was the trial balloon. I was the canary in the mine shaft, and they've gotten away with it, by the way. Other than your donations to my defense fund, remember, the English fascists have gotten away with this smear. How is it that I'm on a list with murderers? How is it that so-called journalists in America say that I'm a list with Hamas lawmakers when the so-called Hamas lawmaker is a man who killed two Jews, then found their four-year-old daughter hiding in a crawl space in Israel and smashed her head in with a rifle butt, and they don't make any reference to that? And that goes for every report in the media, whether it's on Newsmax by Chris Ruddy or anywhere else. They keep saying Hamas lawmaker. They're taking the big lie and they're continuing it. Michael Savage put on a list with others, such as the Hamas lawmaker Yunus, blah, 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 and they don't mention what he actually did. Why is it that? Why is that happening? How is that happening? How is it happening? How could it happen? It's because in order for evil to flourish, good men must do nothing. And the so-called good men of the conservative media have done nothing. And that is why evil has flourished. They're next. I'll be back.
Savage.
Bye, bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
I'm gonna tell you where it's going. We're going to have a martial law will be declared in this country over a pretext. I'd say the likelihood is very high that the gang that has taken over this country will declare something, a pretext. They'll create it, the equivalent of the Reichstag fire, let's put it to you that way. And they will use that as a pretext to put in a form of martial law, which will be cheered on by ABC, CBS, NBC, and the other worms in the media. And I will tell you what they will use. I don't know what they're going to use. I don't know what crisis they're going to gin up, but they're going to do something. And I'm going to read you something now. Just before the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in 1917, late fall 1917, which resulted in the rise of the communists, the rise of the Soviet Union, this is what was going on. There was a crisis affecting every aspect of society. The policies of the government had brought the country to the brink of catastrophe. There was disorder in industry and transport. There was difficulty in obtaining provisions, which, by the way, hasn't happened yet here. Gross industrial production in that year had decreased by over 36% from what it had been in the previous year. In that autumn of 1917, as much as 50% of all enterprises were closed down in major industrial centers. That has not happened yet here, leading to mass unemployment. At the same time, the cost of living increased sharply. That has not yet happened here because the Federal Reserve crooks are manipulating it. The real wages of workers fell about 50% from what they had been just 4 years before. That has happened. The national debt in October of 1917 in Russia had risen fourfold. That has happened. Of this, debts to foreign governments constituted more than over 20% of the debt. What percent of our debt in this country is debt to foreign governments such as China and Saudi Arabia? Is it 20% or higher? The country, meaning the Russia, faced the threat of financial bankruptcy. Well, we are bankrupt. We're just living on basically printed money. And the conditions I read to you describe Russia in 1917, just prior to the Bolshevik Revolution. Now, many of you understand what the Bolshevik Revolution was, and how it led to the collapse of Russia, the rise of the Soviet Union, and communism, etc., and the prison camps, the death camps, the work camps. And you say it can't happen here, and I'm telling you it is happening here. In my opinion, you can call it anything you want. I am not blind to history. I don't give a rat's behind what the vermin in the media say. I am giving you one man's opinion. And since when is one man's opinion illegal? Since when is it illegal for me to bring up historical comparisons and present them as a model of what I think is happening right now? When did that become illegal? When did history itself become illegal? Well, history became illegal in the Soviet Union. They rewrote the history that was inconvenient. And that is happening right now. It has happened for decades in the universities. It happens every day on the media. And when you have a man like me who is an independent thinker, who can put two and two together and doesn't like what he sees going on and fears for the liberty of himself and America, does that make me a man who should be silenced? Should I be silenced? Should I stop asking these questions? Should it be illegal for me to ask these questions? Should any questions be illegal in the United States of America? If you say yes, then you are wearing a swastika on your soul. If you said yes to any of those questions, look in the mirror and you will see, like with disappearing invisible ink, the swastika slowly emerging on your forehead. Charles Manson was ahead of his time. He was a prototypical progressive. Bakersfield, California. Jerry, you're next up on the Savage Nation. I won't get to you right now. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. So what else is there to talk about? Tell me what else there is to talk about in this country. I believe that this is a very dangerous time. I believe the administration is manipulating people in a way that it's never been manipulated before. It's totally illegal to use emails the way they're using them. There's only one reporter who stood up to them. His name is Major Garrett of Fox News. And that slimy, salenterate Gibbs made my flesh crawl. I almost needed a bath with brown soap when I watched that cretin try to wriggle out of the lie. It's interesting, though, that even liberals who worked for Carter understood what he had done. Even a man who had worked for Jimmy Carter, Pat Caddell, a Dem strategist, the current Democrat, talked about the unsolicited email issue. And you won't believe this when you hear it when we come back. Here is former Democrat strategist Pat Caddell, who worked for Jimmy Carter, who says he's a civil libertarian, saying this, that we're on dangerous ground. And he said, do not trust government, whatever you do. And he said, this White House is not to be trusted. He's a Democrat. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
Savage.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Do you think Obama is clueless as to what is going on around them, what the people around them are doing? Do you think he doesn't really know? He's just a nice guy and he's surrounded by evil people? That's possible, you know. It wouldn't be the first time. Yes, he's a leftist. Yes, he's a far leftist, but it doesn't mean he's evil. But there are people around him who are evil. And you must understand that in every government there will arise tyranny unless the government is constrained. That is how America was created, with a separation of powers, a balance of powers. We have no opposition party. The Republican Party has disappeared. We have no opposition press. It has disappeared. There are only a few voices left in the media, mainly in talk radio. One cable channel occasionally does a very good job. Then there is the internet. But other than that, they own all the power structure. We're in very dangerous ground. Now, am I alone in saying this? Are there any liberals who believe that I am right? Former Democratic strategist Pat Caddell defines himself as a civil libertarian, and he says we are on dangerous ground as to what the Obamaites are doing with emails. He worked for Jimmy Carter. Listen to clip three.
This is really dangerous ground. Look, I'm, above all things, I'm a civil libertarian. Liberty is very important. Do not trust governments, whatever you do. That's having been close to them. This White House, what they are doing, and we saw it in the Clunker program, something's going on. This notion that they can track people and use people is going to infuriate Americans to pretend and to do it, first of all. They should understand this is dynamite.
Now go to clip four.
Can you imagine if George Bush, what people like me would be doing, and what people in that press room would have been doing, if this were George Bush and Karl Rove sending the emails, they would not be sitting there like sheep.
Okay, now go to clip five.
I cannot believe how insensitive they are to public opinion. You're the president, you should not refer to people through the DNC as mobs and put that on TV. You should not, on the one hand, then say, oh, I'm for free discussion, but, you know, this right over here. Look, what this politics by the Chicago way, the president's above it.
Okay. Well, now you've got a little picture of this from a Democrat strategist who worked for Jimmy Carter, who is frightened of this government. He sees what's going on. And if you don't see what's going on, it's because you're blind. Or you agree with the power grab. Or you would like to see fascism in America. You understand what I'm saying to you? Jack in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. Let me thank you for taking this call and for being the lightning bolt of the airwaves that inspires our own passion and perseverance. Dr. Savage, having traveled to the old Soviet Union and holding degrees in political science, where I studied a great deal about the Russian Revolution, I have to tell you that the new domestic enemy in the United States regarding the healthcare reform movement is going to be the American middle class, the individualist, the patriot, the small businessman, the technocrat that scraped and studied and worked and made something of their lives. We're going to become the kulaks. For those in your audience who are unfamiliar with the kulaks, they were family farmers who prospered in the early days of the Russian Revolution. And then when Stalin decided to have national agricultural collectivization, government farms controlled by the government where every farmer would become an employee, that's when he vilified these peasants, these farmers, made them the enemy. They had parades denouncing them, and finally they deported them to the gulags where they worked them to death.
And oh my God.
On the brink of something as bad as that.
Yes, he's collectivized the auto industry by and large, the banking industry by and large. He's trying to make it government medicine, then what, government agriculture, government media? Where does it end? It ends with death camps.
Exactly. We're talking about a totalitarian worldview. You know, you said something that was so pregnant with meaning. You had said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The utopian socialists, the dewy-eyed Marxists, have this vision of heaven on earth if only we could control the economy, if we could control people, control society, we would have equality, we would have fulfillment, and it doesn't work. Anyone who's read...
But Jack, notice the paradox here. You have people calling themselves liberal, who you would think mean live and let live. But they don't mean live and let live. They mean live and let die. They mean live for me, but you will be my serf. You will report to one of the commissars of the Obama administration. Is that what you fear, Jack?
Dr. Savage, yes, I do, and it's nothing new to me.
Well, how do you answer hate groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, one of the most dangerous groups America has ever seen, who declares that there are hate groups out there now like Rush Limbaugh and others, by the way, who need to be curtailed because they're stirring up hatred against Obama? How do you answer groups like the hate group Southern Poverty Law Center?
The only answer has to be the growing indignation and the righteous anger of the people who are now finding their voice in these town meetings. Eventually, it will grow into an even bigger movement. But at such time, the polarization will be seen as such a threat to this administration, they will not shrink from using dirty tricks and brute methods guised as law enforcement.
That's right. Remember who these people are. The Blagojevich machine in Chicago. People probably forgot Blagojevich, the governor of that state who was thrown out of office. Blagojevich was not an anomaly of this machine. He was a representative of the machine. It's the very same machine that created Obama, is it not, Jack?
Yes, that's exactly right. But it's not unique to just Chicago. Virtually everywhere you'll find some clique, some cabal that...
That's right. In San Francisco, we have a mini version of it, the mini-me's of Chicago, run by the Nancy Pelosi clique. They all call themselves libertarians, but in fact, we know they're the opposite. They are actually very, very controlling. They want everything under their control. So they own the local newspaper, and they destroyed it. By owning a local newspaper, they destroyed the local newspaper, which is exactly what happens when government controls something. They usually crush it to death.
It doesn't work. It's a system that cannot work in the same way that Stalin collectivized agriculture and millions starved in the Ukraine. If you nationalize health care with these fraudulent phonies, what you'll have is a national disaster.
I remember reading about that in high school, that Stalin collectivized the farms, but Mao Zedong did the same thing in China, and 30 million Chinese starved, didn't he?
Well, you know, actually, he was more tempered in his approach to the collectivization of agriculture because he saw what had happened in the Soviet Union. But nevertheless, they did lose millions of people, and one of the episodes which was misguided was the Great Leap Forward, the crash effort to industrialize China overnight, where millions of people lost their lives.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to my biggest fear, that they're going to create a Reichstag fire in this country to find an internal enemy. What do you think the Obama administration is going to do now that they're cornered? Who is going to be the enemy, and how are they going to define it?
That's where you and I may disagree, only in the scenario, but not in the plot. You see a Reichstag fire. Here's what I see. Sergei Kirov gets assassinated, and suddenly gun activists, Second Amendment activists, gun owners are the enemy. I see it.
Wait, who's Sergei Kirov?
Sergei Kirov was supposedly Stalin's right-hand man. He was the party boss of the Leningrad Soviet, and he was assassinated at his party headquarters in Leningrad, and that's what kicked off the Great Purge. And there's every reason...
Oh, in other words, they did it themselves and then blamed it on the internal enemy.
Exactly.
You mean like the man in the swastika this week who turned out was an Obama plant?
There you go. Okay, I read...
The Alinsky School of go to the meetings where Republicans speak in the 60s and cheer them on while wearing swastikas?
Right. That's right. Duplicity.
Okay, question. So, Jack, you seem to be a man who's, you know, earthy and knows what he's talking about. Can they be stopped? When you have men like Pat Caddell, a Democrat strategist, saying that they're dangerous, don't trust the government, do you think that maybe they can be stopped in time?
I'm very doubtful, because they control the most powerful military in the world. They control the technology that's used by local and state police and law enforcement. They control the media, and they're tightening the noose around free speech. It's going to be very difficult. You would need something like what happened in Poland and in Eastern Europe, where people simply don't go to work, close up the shops, and bring everything to a halt.
You're talking about a general strike in order to stop the government?
Yeah, that's the only way.
That can't happen because the unions did that in Poland. The unions are in Obama's back pocket here.
The unions are bureaucracies. I know a little something about them. And I can tell you they're bureaucracies, and oftentimes there's a disconnect between the bureaucrats, the labor bureaucrats, and the rank and file. The rank and file is made up of flesh and blood American men and women, and they have...
Well, look, I'm not a community organizer. I'm a talk show host. I don't have a party. I don't run for office. But believe me, if someone were to organize even the truckers of America to tie up every bridge and tunnel, and I'm not suggesting it because I'm not a community organizer, and block every bridge and tunnel in America until they stopped it, that would have an effect, wouldn't it? But that would take real organization, wouldn't it?
Would take organization, but I really think that the alternative leaders that we need have not yet surfaced. These are going to be accomplished men and women.
What about the Tea Party people? Are they anyone who could do anything here?
I'm sorry, what party people?
The Tea Party protesters, are they a force?
Right now, they're a blip on the national radar. They're very small. They're very fragmented. There's not much communication in between the different Tea Party groups. They haven't been able to hit the power panel of the American psyche. They haven't gone from...
Well, but the people who have are the town hallers. How did that happen, Jack? How did the Obamaites lose control of that?
They opened it up to everyone, thinking they were going to hear only good things. They opened it up, and now they're charging people $10 and $25 to try and discourage them, when you and I know that it's the...
Wait a minute. They're charging people to go to town hall meetings?
That's right. That's right. That was on the...
You mean the very same Obamacare people who want to give medical care for free to illegal aliens and not even charge them an entry fee, so to speak, $10 to go to a hospital, now want to charge for free speech?
Yeah, here in Florida, it's Rob Wexler. You know, he's charging $10 if you want to go to his...
Oh, well, Wexler is a real piece of work. In my day, a man like him wouldn't even been able to own a lock store.
Exactly right.
And Congressman Wexler, in my day, could not have even owned a lock store and run it right. The man couldn't have sold smoked salmon without robbing the people. Probably would have sold contaminated salmon from China.
You took the words out of my mouth.
A guy like the Wexler, your congressman from Florida, has always struck me as the type. He would have bought salmon on a bargain salmon, bruised salmon from China, and tainted salmon, in other words, and sold it to the delis of South Florida. And when someone died, he would have said he had nothing to do with it. That's what he strikes me as, that type of oily character. He's charging to go to a town hall meeting?
That's what was reported on the news today.
There's a liberal charging to go to a town hall meeting. I love it. That's amazing. That takes the cake. Jack, you are an educated man, and always you're going to have platinum pass into the Savage Nation. Guys, if Jack will give you a contact address, let's get Jack on regularly on the Savage Nation. I'll be back for a few concluding calls in this hour right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here we are. Congressman says socialist elite looking for excuse to declare martial law. So don't think that I came up with this on my own. There's a congressman from Georgia who says this is a stinking rotten fish and they don't want you to smell it. And he said the socialists running America are looking for an excuse to declare martial law. So we have at least one congressman, one out of the hundreds who understands what's going on is willing to say a word. That's Congressman Paul Brown, B-R-O-U-N, Republican, Athens, Georgia. And he gets standing ovations, and he doesn't charge a bagel and lox to come hear him speak. Look, let me explain something to you. What I do for a living is very stressful, and I don't really want to do it anymore, and I don't want to become the enemy of the government, but I'm doing it for a number of reasons. I am the enemy of the government. They have me targeted. And they put in motion banning me in Britain in order to silence me here, and I don't know what's coming next. I am going to stay in radio. I'm going to make this commitment right now, as I can stay right now, as I feel right now, and as far as I can think right now, I will leave radio soon after being taken off the ban list. I will leave radio. Now, you may say, well, that's a plus and a minus for you. Many of you would say, well, I hope you don't get off the list because I don't want you to leave radio. I've done my work. I put in 15 years. I've written the bestsellers. Banned in Britain will be out in the next month for you to buy. My biography will be out next year from Ellis. I'm making this commitment right now. The day my name is removed from that list of murderers and terrorists, and I've cleared my name, and I've gotten my satisfaction from those evildoers in England, soon thereafter I will leave radio. You will not hear from me again. I will disappear. I will be like Johnny Carson with the white hat, hopefully with a number of years left to enjoy whatever's left of the suns for me. And however summers are left, and that'll be it. I'm going to leave. You'll never hear from me again. I have no desire to enter politics. I have no desire to continue this struggle against this evil that has arisen in America. I can see it as though it's a tidal wave, and I feel the tidal wave going out, and I feel it sucking us all out into the ocean. It's not yet come down upon us. Trust me. Right now, it's sucking out. It's not yet come down upon us. It will. So I'm going to make that commitment again. I'm struggling through my attorneys to get my name off the list because I am a talk show host, not a murderer. I cannot believe that reporters will say that one of the men on the list is a Hamas lawmaker without referring to his crimes, where he killed two Jewish people, a young man and woman in their 20s, hiding from the terrorists as they broke into their house. And then they had put their little four-year-old daughter in a crawl space. And then when the Palestinian Hamas lawmaker found the little girl after killing her parents, he smashed in her head with a rifle butt. He had been in prison in Israel. He was only released as part of a prison trade. And yet the vermin in the Associated Press, the vermin in the British media, continue to call him a Hamas lawmaker while they call me a shock jock. This shows you the trouble we are in. This shows you the danger you are in. This shows you what's coming next. So again, I say this and mark it down. August 14th, 2009, Michael Savage says that soon after his name is removed from the list in England and other conditions are met for that removal, that my name is cleared, etc., I will leave talk radio and you'll never hear from me again. I'm making that commitment right now. Write it down. It's the way it is. Everything has a span. Shows have their span. Lives have their span. Animals have their span. Humans have their span. Programs have their span. It's been 15 good years. I will be off that list within the year. By hook or by crook, whether it's through the liberals taking my name off the list from the lawsuit, or when the conservatives in England come to power, my name will be taken off that list, or by some miracle somebody in the Obama administration comes to understand that through discovery, the trail will lead back to them, and they will work to get my name off the list, and they'll never know, and they'll know about it. One way or the other, my name will be cleared, and soon thereafter, I will be gone. That's the way I want it. I will just read all the novels I put away for the last 30 years. I'll read all of the history I put away for the last 30 years. Or I'll do nothing. I'm capable of doing nothing. I don't know if you know that about me. I can do nothing. I'm one of the most productive people I've ever met or read about in the world. I don't know how I do it. I really don't know when it gets done. But I can also do nothing. I know how to sit in a chair and look at the sky. I can sit and listen to seals barking. I can go out on my boat and turn the engines off and watch the waves lapping at the hull as I eat an avocado sandwich. The commitment is, soon after my name is removed from the list, one way or the other, I will leave radio.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We've been talking about the Obama administration and their spying on Americans in order to push their plan for socialized medicine. I want you to hear Major Garrett, a smart reporter and a brave one from Fox News, who confronted Obama's press lackey on this issue. Listen.
I have received emails from people who did not in any way, shape, or form seek any communication from the White House, who have never registered on OFA, who have never registered on a campaign website. Let me finish my question.
I'm going to give you a chance to finish your question. You've done this a couple of times, Major, and I just want to be very clear, okay? OFA, no, don't look funny. OFA, whether Obama for America or Organizing for America, has nothing to do with, never has had anything to do with, what if you sign up for through whitehouse.gov to receive emails. So let's just, the reason I interrupted you, because I want you to rephrase your question that doesn't continue to assume that somebody is violating the law.
What a lowlife, what a slime mold as Gibbs is. He won't even give a straight answer. But what was amazing was the response from Pat Caddell, a former Democratic strategist who even worked for Carter. Even Caddell was shocked by what the Obama administration is doing.
This is really dangerous ground. Look, I'm above all things, I'm a civil libertarian. Liberty is very important. Do not trust governments, whatever you do. That's having been close to them. This White House, what they are doing, and we saw it in the Clunker program, something's going on. This notion that they can track people and use people is going to infuriate Americans. To pretend and to do it, first of all, they should understand this is dynamite.
And he made an excellent point. What if this had been the Bush administration? What would the left be saying now?
Can you imagine if George Bush, what people like me would be doing, and what people in that press room would have been doing, if this were George Bush and Karl Rove sending the emails, they would not be sitting there like sheep. I cannot believe how insensitive they are to public opinion. You're the president, you should not refer to people through the DNC as mobs and put that on TV. You should not, on the one hand, then say, oh, I'm for free discussion, but, you know, this is all right over here. Look, what this politics by the Chicago way, the president's above it.
Bravo, Pat. At least there's one honest liberal left in the media. John in Connecticut, line 5. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, how you doing, Michael? One of the reasons why we don't listen to or expect to hear the arts and entertainment from you and others is basically we're getting from other places, and you know, I can get my arts and entertainment and go to museums and get that type of thing from other sources, and it's pretty unspinnable from my perspective. We listen to you for direct commentary on politics and finance and other things like that.
Okay, I understand that, but what if a person who is on the right side of the dial, as I am, goes to a museum or an art show and I talk about it? Why is that not of interest? In other words, seeing an art show from the conservative perspective, I'll give you an example. San Francisco once had a pretty good set of museums here. Most of them have been taken over by radical leftists who put on some of the most abominable exhibitions imaginable, such as a series of dresses and clothing worn by some old woman who had a lot of money. They actually put on an exhibit of the woman's shoes, her dresses, her clothing. And I went there, and I think rather hysterically ripped the exhibit apart. I thought that was political and artistic.
I agree. I know there's a lot of other examples of that kind of garbage out there. And, I've heard about it in New York City. Occasionally there's been art shows where we've heard all about them. But,
well, that's what I mean. I'm not going to just talk about art to sound intellectual or to sound like a pseudo-intellectual, but when they do an exhibit in a museum about a woman's shoes. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And I said, this is an example of what's going on in museums today. Now, that's what I mean by covering the arts. Now, of course, in passing, I'll also talk about one of the finest oceanic collections in the world, which happens to be in the museum here, but the best one is in New York City, the Rockefeller Collection. You've probably seen it yourself.
Yeah, and we appreciate the interjection occasionally, but for the most part, you know, mainly we're looking for, you know, the direct...
All right, so what you're saying in a nice way is lay off the art crap and stick to politics.
I don't mind the art commentary occasionally, but I can get that from other places. What I can't get is direct commentary on politics. It's always spun in other places. That's why we come to you, because
listen, here's the thing. I come on late in the day in New York on the East Coast. I come on late afternoon in the Bay Area on the West Coast and in between in the rest of the country. You've heard it all. Haven't you heard it by now from the golfer, the wall banger, and the hemorrhoid? Haven't you heard everything about health care, or you don't have the time to listen earlier? Is that what you're saying?
We get it a little bit, but you give us a little bit different perspective. You know, appreciate your perspective on things, you know, the way that you bring in your background with the botany and things
like that.
All
right, so you want me to focus almost entirely, as I've done for 15 years, on politics and lay off the other stuff?
Flavor occasionally, but I do appreciate
it. I hear you. I don't know if I can do it anymore, though. I'm making an admission, John. I think after 15 years of it, I'm bored of it. I find politics extremely boring. We know look, let's talk about the basics. Obama is a Marxist. Everything about him, if it walks like a Marxist, if it talks like a neo-Marxist, it is a neo-Marxist. Why was it fair game to call conservatives who were behind Bush neocons? Why can't we call Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel and all of the others around Obama what they are, which is neo-Marxists? The answer is because we have no control over the print media in this country. They are neo-Marxists, period. I mean, the slur neocon went on for years when Bush was in power, right? Yet we now have a stalking horse communist regime running this country. Some of them are overt communists. Some of them are mild communists. Some of them are light communists. There's not one of them who is an American from my point of view. Every one of them is trying to disassemble this great nation. But I've said that over and over again, John. Thanks for the call. If I was a psychiatrist, I'd take off all of August. But I'm not going to take off. I mean, you know, the end of August at the Hotel Ozone was an art film of the 1960s. I never forget that title, The End of August at the Hotel Ozone, which is exactly what the show has always been like for me in August. It's so different, August. No one's around. They are around. Those who are around are bored out of their minds. You know, most of the audience is somewhere else, wishing they weren't. But you look around, anyone who's in the media who can sustain themselves stays in the media. They don't leave. What do they need a vacation for? What are they going to find in Martha's Vineyard that they don't have on the radio, on the television? Tell me. What's waiting for them in Martha's Vineyard? To rub shoulders with the biggest crooks of our time? What, do you want to play Frisbee with the biggest thieves in the history of the world? Making believe they're nice guys because they're liberals? The robber barons of today, they all congregate in Martha's Vineyard. One green mailer after another. One shyster after another. One would-be Madoff after another, but they're such made men in terms of the government that you're never going to even hear of them. The G5s fly in. G550s fly in. Anyone with less than a G5 is not even allowed into the top guy's house. They have to park... In Connecticut, as a matter of fact. If they don't have a G5, they can't even land it on Martha's Vineyard. So, I mean, what's on a vacation? I don't know. And when you're young, a vacation is terrific. Well, if you have young children, I could see it. A grown-up doesn't need a vacation. A grown-up can have a vacation in his own mind. That's the vacation. Unless it's, okay, so it's hot, yes. So you go where it's cool. I understand that. That I understand. That's one thing. But the old vacations are factory worker, toot-toot, whistle blows, you got 2 weeks off, you know, for the holiday, so to speak. You go to Mallorca? What, are you a Brit all of a sudden? You're flying to Mallorca with the family? You're going to drink too much, eat too much, mild brioche, that's the stuff? I mean, what are you going to do there? You're going to eat squid? Calamari? I mean, what are you going to do on your vacation? I don't know. I don't know what people do. Everyone has a different thing. But if you got young kids, yes, I could understand it. Take them somewhere where they want to go, or you want to expose them to art. I could understand that. Or a wedding you can go to. Told you when I was young and traveling on the MV Waterman, my big trip to Europe after college, during college. It was a former troop ship in World War II. They converted it to a college boat. The greatest fun I ever had in my life was on that ship. We drink all night, and we would sleep all day. What fun. Those were the days. So many characters. God, I can't even remember them where they are today. I don't know. But the people I looked up to on that ship as like giants of the arts probably were never heard from. You know what I'm saying? When you're young, everything's upside down. You think you're nothing and they're something. It turns out they're nothing and you're something. I remember there was a guy, Andrew. I thought he was so smart because he had like a weird sense of humor. He sounded like he was on MSNBC today where, you know, sarcasm and irony passes for intelligence. But he did it so well. He was rich. He went to a boarding school, and he grew up with that snotty attitude. And I kind of loved him because I thought he was so clever. I don't know if he ever amounted to anything, but I did, and he didn't. I would have heard of him if he did. But the point I'm getting is that was a vacation. There's no such thing as that anymore, you know, to me. But if you're on a vacation, God bless you. If you got a quest coming up, if you enjoy it, it's good for you. Just not good for me. I'm going to be here is what I'm saying. So get ready for a long August. Because Michael Savage is going nowhere. Remember, I'm a member of the PGs or the GPs. Here for you on your local station.
Savage.
President Obama on a campaign-style push to sell health care reform to the American people. His message also going out in email form, in some instances, to people who never asked to be contacted. Well, yesterday, Fox's Major Garrett addressed the issue of unsolicited emails during the press briefing. That's when things got a little nasty.
I have received emails from people who did not in any way, shape, or form seek any communication from the White House, who have never registered on OFA, who have never registered on a campaign website for the...
Is Obama spying on America? Now, imagine if you were a liberal and Dick Cheney sent you an unsolicited email urging you to support some piece of legislation that he was pushing for. You had never signed up to be on an email list, but maybe once you had visited Dick Cheney's website. Wouldn't you wonder how Dick Cheney had gotten a hold of your email? As a liberal who supports civil liberties, wouldn't you be outraged that you had been tracked by the U.S. government, spied on by the administration? Well, that's just what happened in the last couple of days. People have been receiving unsolicited emails on health care from the White House. Barack Obama's presidential campaign and his political organization, Organizing for America, and yet for some reason the left is silent. For some reason the so-called American Civil Liberties Union is nowhere on this. For some reason, when the Bush administration was accused of monitoring emails for the purpose of rooting out terrorists, the left was up in arms. But now that Obama seems to be spying on America for his own political benefit to root out patriots, the silence on the left is deafening. You see, the White House has a massive email list it uses to push socialized medicine. This week, Obama's Chicago crony, David Axelrod, sent out an email to this list asking supporters of Obamacare to disseminate his propaganda across the internet. But some who got emails directly from the White House were never in communication with the Obama administration and are asking if visiting the White House website automatically places them on an email distribution list. When Robert Gibbs, Obama's press hack, was asked if the White House engages in this form of spying, he refused to give an answer. His evasion speaks for itself. I believe that Obama is spying on America and that his administration should be investigated. On to other topics. You watch the fog coming into the Golden under the Golden Gate at the end of the day. It reminds you of God. I mean, you know, if you're not a religious person, you can become a religious person. You watch the fog rolling over the hills of Sausalito down onto the water, or vice versa. You watch the fog lifting and the sun breaking through, and the sun breaks through. It's only people who live out here who understand. Well, people who have an idea how beautiful nature can be. And then you read, you know, and we're playing Frankie Avalon for that reason, because I was talking about Catalina. Realize that it's part of a geological change. Catalina Island began as a part of the seabed, but a series of complicated plate movements created the island at least 20 million years ago. A chain of volcanic islands rose from the seabed off the California coast, between 24 million and 5.3 million years ago. Complex Earth movement shifted the island some 150 miles northward from near the Mexican border to its present position. Now listen to this. A spectacular ancient shoreline, complete with sunken river valleys, lies 80 feet below the Pacific, a mile west of the island. It's amazing to me when you realize that it is just a blink of the eye what we're living through here. The complicated lives that we lead, where we think we're building a future, and that there's always going to be a tomorrow like the tomorrow that your father had or the tomorrow that you thought was waiting for you, can be wiped out in the blink of an eye. Never mind from man, but from nature itself. It's all a miracle. That's why if you read the Jewish prayer book, one of the earliest prayers, people don't understand, it's one of the first prayers in the Jewish prayer book, which is the first of the five major, the first of the monotheistic religions to have a prayer book. In it, there is a statement that says, thank you, God, for many things. And one of the things it says is, our body is filled with many orifices and many cavities. And if even one of these should close, even for a moment, we would not exist. And the religious pray to God for that, because they recognize every morning the miracle of waking up. Now think about the miracle of that in terms of conceptualizing that every breath you take is a miracle. I mean, I don't know if you could exist in that world. It's hard to believe that anyone could walk around, that in every breath they take, they realize that God gave them that breath. And what to do with that breath is the issue. What are you doing with it? It's too complicated to go into. I'm not here to give you any Norman Vincent Peale job here. But it is a miracle when you think about it. I mean, I don't know if you understand how miraculous life is. Now we come to America, the greatest experiment in the history of man, a land where freedom was supposed to be granted to every man. But the freedom was not free, and the freedom was not to be given to you by a government. It was a freedom that was given to you by God, and a freedom you were supposed to maintain, or else it would be taken away from you by despotic individuals around you who were no different than the British, but in some cases, maybe worse than the Brits who once ruled this land as a colony. And now we have a government that may as well be a government of a foreign country, a government that is as foreign to the people, perhaps even more foreign to the people, than were the British in the early days of the colonies of the United States of America.
Savage.
The vermin of the media. You know, sometimes when I get angry, I refer to the vast majority in the mainstream media as vermin. It's a shocking word. According to Webster's Dictionary, vermin comes from the Latin word vermis, which means worm, and is defined as, quote, small, common, harmful, or objectionable animals, as lice or fleas that are difficult to control. One such harmful member of the mainstream media did an article on me in which they completely obliterated the real facts. She referred to one of the terrorists who had been placed on the UK ban list as a, quote, Hamas lawmaker. She referred to me as a shock jock. She repeated lies about me fabricated by the Soros-funded Media Matters. This is someone who has written fair articles about me in the past, who then turned around and stabbed me in the back right after the New Yorker article came out and put the context correctly. This is how I responded to her in an email. Let's get the facts straight. The Hamas lawmaker you refer to is a murderer. He executed two young Jewish parents who were hiding from him and then smashed in the head of their four-year-old daughter with a rifle butt. He was imprisoned in Israel for these crimes for years, and you call him a lawmaker, and you call me a shock jock? Shame on you. That is why your newspaper is dead. The New Yorker profile you give one sentence? I am the only person in the history of this provincial backwater of San Francisco to have ever been profiled by the New Yorker, joining the League of the Truly Celebrated, and you give it one sentence? Shame on you. You know, we've talked about Obama's connections with certain leftist terrorist types. One of the biggest names was Bill Ayers. Joining us now is Cliff Kincaid with a Savage Nation exclusive on an upcoming conference, which is going to release some more information about Bill Ayers. Cliff, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on the show again. We've got an exclusive for you. We're going to have an amazing news conference in Washington, D.C., coming up on August 20th at the National Press Club. Now, that doesn't mean the press is going to pay any attention to it, but we're going to give it a try. We're going to go after Bill Ayers, or should I say the distinguished professor of education, Bill Ayers. Actually, our conference is going to go beyond just this communist terrorist professor, Michael. We're going to call it Communism in the Classroom. And the timing is, of course, appropriate because so many kids, so many students and young people are going back to school. What we've done is take a look at how the heck Bill Ayers actually got his job at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And we also are looking at how many other Bill Ayers types are in colleges and universities across the United States. You know, when Obama was running and his relationship with Bill Ayers got some attention, some people were amazed that this communist terrorist who specialized as a member of the Weather Underground in bombing police stations, and by the way, he and his terrorist wife, Bernadine Dorn, are still under investigation for the 1970 bombing murder of a San Francisco police sergeant. But how did Ayers get this prestigious job at a publicly funded university, the University of Illinois? And so we've decided to try to find out.
How did you get your information on Obama's friend Ayers?
What we've done is submit a series of Freedom of Information Act requests under state law in Illinois to the university, trying to find out how he got his job, how he got his promotion, how he got his tenure, and where he's been going on the taxpayer dime, in other words, foreign travel, and what he is actually teaching in the classroom. And we've got a lot of answers. We can't go into them all here, of course. We're going to have a full-blown conference in Washington on the 20th. But I commissioned a professor out of Georgia, Mary Graybar, a great writer, got an academic and scholarly background, to take a look at some of the courses that Ayers has been teaching down there. She's already written a couple reports for us. And I'll tell you, just to sum it up, that although she puts it in somewhat diplomatic and academic language, this guy, this professor of education, is really just a communist propagandist in the classroom. And we've got the proof. Now, it's been a struggle. We had to go through a lot of letters, appeals of some denials of our requests for information, but we finally got out of the president of the university himself, B. Joseph White, some of the syllabi, the course descriptions of what Ayers is actually teaching. And we're going to be putting all of this up on our website at usasurvival.org. That's usasurvival.org, because my group, America's Survival, is sponsoring the conference. So we've gotten some of that. We've gotten some of his syllabi, but here's where we ran into a brick wall. We couldn't find out who recommended Ayers for his teaching position, who agreed to it, who approved it, and who was on the committee that decided to eventually give him tenure.
Why not?
Because they said, oh, if they gave that kind of information to us, that would be a violation of his personal privacy. His personal privacy, when he is a professor with access to young people at a publicly funded, that is taxpayer-funded university. And let me add at this point, Michael, that it's not just, his influence is not just felt at the University of Illinois in Chicago. This is a guy whose work, whose books are being cited by other education professors across the country, who is the vice president of a National Education Academic Association. All of this Mary Graybar is going to go into in some detail. And so because after a lot of searching, a lot of research, we have to conclude, frankly, that the reason Ayers got this job was because of his daddy, his rich daddy, a man now deceased by the name of Thomas Ayers, who was a big mover and shaker in Chicago. He was the CEO of Commonwealth Edison. That was the electrical utility. He was also a big player not only in Chicago politics, but in Chicago cultural activities. So our conclusion, as Mary Graybar puts it, is that Ayers got his teaching job at the University of Illinois the Chicago way. And we know what that's all about.
Well, where does it go from here?
We're going to continue to put the heat on Bill Ayers with the release of several reports. Plus, we've got a great other speaker coming down, Paul Kengor, Grove City College, who's written a number of great books, including one about Ronald Reagan and his battle against communism. Paul Kengor is going to talk at our conference on August 20th in Washington on the subject of what he calls anti-anti-communism. In other words, why anti-communists cannot survive as professors in academia for the most part. And then Mary Graybar and I will follow by discussing how there are actual communists in academia, not only Bill Ayers. We're going to give you a lot of other examples. Plus, I've got a new report we're releasing about, of all things, a journalism educator, a professor from Northwestern, again, Bernadine Dorn's school these days, a guy named Curtis McDougall, now deceased. He actually wrote my college textbook in journalism called Interpretative Reporting. We happened, Michael, to get Curtis McDougall's FBI file. He was under surveillance by the FBI. We got his 315-page FBI file involved in all kinds of communist front groups, including an association with Soviet-funded publishing house. It's just mind-blowing, hair-raising material that we have that we're going to release again in Washington on August 20th, just as students are going back to school. And I just have to say, Michael, thanks for having me on, give you the heads up, inside scoop about what's happening. And of course, through USASurvival.org, people can find out more. And we hope, of course, as a result of this, that the kind of citizen activism we're seeing in the congressional town halls, where people are calling to take their country back, that we're going to take back our colleges and universities from the communists who are using them as brainwashing and indoctrination centers, targeting our young people and using them to destroy our countries.
Cliff Kincaid, thanks for the exclusive and thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Musings on this, on that, on here, on there, whatever. I'm bored out of my gourd. I'm tired. Summertime. I should be on vacation. Except I hate vacations. I just went on one and I'm exhausted from it. I couldn't wait to get home. Why does anyone go on a vacation? I can see not working. That I can understand. But you know when you get to where you're going, you're unhappy there anyway. The bed's no good. The food's no good. You got to listen to strangers. Don't you wince around? Well, when the kids are young, you're obliged to go on vacations for their sake, but they hate it as well. A young child doesn't know where they are. That you got to understand. If they're well-fed and they're in front of a fire hydrant in the Bronx in 1944 in the street, they could be in the Palace of Versailles. It wouldn't matter to them if they're running in a bathing suit in the street, as I did, with the fire hydrant open before the PC police closed down the fire hydrants. That was our swimming pool. It was Longfellow Avenue with a fire hydrant, with the smiling father standing by. They had a wrench, they opened the fire hydrant, the kids had a good summer. You didn't have to go, with a suspension of a vacation. But all right, things changed, so now you go on vacation. The kids don't want to be with you. And for those of you who have children, by the way, the worst is yet to come. Let's say they're young, that's okay, because they don't know better yet. You try taking children who are between the ages of 13 and 15 on a vacation when you still think that they're children and they're not and their minds are elsewhere. It is like taking a strange couple on a trip, buying them airfare, buying them every meal, and having them not talk to you. Play Cannonball Adderley. I'll start the show in a minute. I have no idea why I just talked about that. No, I don't want to hear it anymore. It's too tooty. Play A-Train. Give me an A-Train job. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Quicker on the uptake, Johnson. Let's go. A-Train. I never saw anything like this. There should be a button you press. You're not actually going for a record, are you? They're lost today. Lost in the ethers of the radio land. How can I do a show without quickness? What, did we lose the connection? That was only an hour. You know what that was to me? The average break was 15 seconds. To me, it was like a year. Mood is gone already. I'm finished. The 9-year-old small boy in a polo shirt on a hot July day reaches into the Coca-Cola icebox, not refrigerator. Big pieces of ice are floating in the water. His arm turns blue as he fishes for the soda on the bottom of the box. Most of them have been taken by the... You want me to do nostalgia today? What do you want me to do? Politics? Imagine they put on now. They're reaching the bottom of the barrel. Why is that guy not in Martha's Vineyard kissing Obama's behind? Why is he on MSNBC? I told you he was going to Martha's Vineyard. I knew that. All of the big libs, all the gonoffs, the bigger the gonoff, the bigger the house on Martha's Vineyard. The bigger the banking crook, the larger the home on Martha's Vineyard. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Play some music.
When you wiggle to the left, you wiggle to the right, you do the ooby-dooby, you might bow your mind.
One of Obama's campaign promises was to end the military don't ask, don't tell policy put in place by Clinton. The policy is still there, and one of the reasons may be a recent poll of current military members. Joining us now to tell us about this poll is Grace Vuoto from the Washington Times.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. This is really an incredible story that came to me from one of my sources. And the upshot is that there was a poll conducted within one of the largest military officers associations in the United States. This was a poll about gays in the military. And the question was put to all those who wanted to participate on it. It was an online poll. Do you support efforts essentially to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which prohibits gays, professed gays, from serving in the military? Well, what's interesting here is that the military's officer association, they produced this poll, and then they took the results offline. Why did they do that? That's a million-dollar question. But what the poll clearly shows is that the majority of the respondents do not support any efforts to openly integrate gays in the military. This is information that has been confirmed again and again by multiple sources, not just the MOAA survey, the Military Officers Association survey, but also polls done in the Military Times, and even as a result of an open letter presented to Congress by 1,100 flag and general retired officers, including 51 four-stars. So the upshot of all this is the majority of service members oppose integrating gays in the military. Is the Obama administration listening to these facts? And another very important question is, why are the leaders of military organizations not being much more vocal on this question?
In the report, you said that 31% of personnel said that the don't ask, don't tell policy should be repealed to allow individuals to serve regardless of sexual orientation, while 52% supported an outright ban.
52% support an outright ban, meaning they believe that integrating homosexuals in the military is a bad idea, that it lowers troop morale, and that it potentially presents national security risks in the sense that it degrades and demoralizes the troops. What's interesting here, Michael, is that it looks like the Democrats are determined to ram this through regardless of what is in the best interests of the military community. There's a concerted effort being made now on the Hill to get this legislation passed, and from what I understand, they're going to aim to try to get this passed in early 2010. Now, what I'm pointing out is that the Obama administration is vastly underestimating the resistance that they are likely to come across amongst the community itself, who thinks that it is just a horrible idea. What's also extremely interesting is this. The poll shows us that contrary to what the proponents of this legislation are saying, there has been no generational shift. In other words, one of the arguments they're making is that it's a new generation now, and this new generation, who is much more tolerant of homosexuals, is going to welcome a change in the existing law. However, the poll that was conducted by MOAA shows us that there really hasn't been much of a change. 64% of those who were polled were younger than 45, and yet the results still showed that there is support for keeping the legislation on the books and not integrating gays openly in the military.
If the administration goes ahead and does this, regardless of popular sentiment, what effect do you think this will have on the morale of the troops?
Well, first of all, I want to say that we should never count the people out. This is a democracy, and it really is up to all those, both within the military community and also just civilians who care, to take a stand and to make their voices heard. And one of the ways to make their voices heard, for example, is to insist that information like this does make the light of day. I mean, this poll, it was taken off the website of the MOAA, and now they've even pulled it off the server who conducted the poll. So there is an effort here to really suppress the information. So the first thing I would say is, let's not count the citizens of America out on this issue. Having said that, I also want to emphasize why it's important to be vigilant on the topic. Because if you integrate gays into the military, it is the same thing as saying that men and women can be in close quarters on a daily basis, and this would have absolutely no effect on our combat readiness. I think it's a preposterous proposition. I mean, if you consider a very simple fact, if you ask any spouse, would they be willing to have their spouse dine regularly with a member of the opposite sex? I'm just saying dine regularly in a public setting. Most of us would say absolutely not. And I can tell you that I, as a very jealous and protective spouse, would say absolutely not. And so when you think about the military, you have to think about it in terms of the proximity that our men and women are obliged to work in. They are under, you know, working under very, very close quarters on a daily basis under intense stress. And so integrating this dynamic of having open gaze amongst them is a recipe for chaos and disorder and all kinds of problems. And I do not see how that makes us a stronger fighting unit. I think one of the things we really have to ask is, why is it in the national security of the United States to change the law? That's a question that has to be answered before we tamper with what is the most effective fighting force in the world.
Well, thanks for the information, Grace. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.